You ever get the feeling that everything in America is completely f***ed up?
They're saying I should think stuff. Something is wrong with me.
To be so cynical.
Practice. Welcome to another exciting, informative, enthralling. I'm out of adjectives. I need a thesaurus. Welcome to another episode of Positive Cynicism. Normally, this would be a week where we discuss politics. However, due to some scheduling changes and wanting to wait until after the Democratic debates happen, we've postponed the political nature or the political episode, and we're going to bring you a more personal, more heartwarming, touching, pseudo wonder why bonus episode right now. I have Mike DeKalb standing by to join me after a commercial break. But before we get to that commercial break, remember there are more shows here on JitteryMonkey.com or the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network. You have Five Heart, Nerds United, My 123 Cents. Check them all out. Subscribe, listen, leave reviews wherever you do listen to podcasts. And make sure you go over to jitterymonkey.com, hit the shop button, and buy a t-shirt. We are working on a new line of baby gear for Positive Cynicism. Something that says either poo good or do something positive. So if you are any good at marketing, give us some better suggestions, because that's what we're working with right now. Anyway, commercial break, and then we'll be right back with something that is going to be very glorious, or Gloria, or, well, it will not leave you feeling blue. That's all I'm going to say.
Hey everyone, Kevin Huntsberger here from My 123 Cents, the podcast, and my123cents.com. Every Monday, a new episode drops with the latest news and happenings in the world of professional wrestling. Head to the archives and listen to interviews with legends of the ring like Double J, Jeff Jarrett, Mick Foley, Kamala, and Dan the Beast Severin. Current superstars like Sheamus, Xavier Woods, and Kofi Kingston have been part of the discussion too. Again, it's My 123 Cents, the podcast, a wrestling fan's perspective.
If you've been paying attention to hockey over the last couple months, then you are very familiar with the song Gloria and are probably singing along right now. Unless you're a Chicago Blackhawks fan. Maybe not. Anyway, I am joined, as I said before the commercial break, by Mike DeKalb, the hockey transplant. You can find him at his website, hockeytransplant.com. You can find him on Twitter at Mike DeKalb. You can find me on Twitter at Chad Smart. It's very simple. Find us. You will be blown away by the amazing tweets that we send out on a daily basis. Mike, I'm rambling again like I always do. Welcome back to the show, especially for a bonus episode, though we won't be talking about the Jonas Brothers, so there's no bonus Jonas.
Bonus Jonas? Okay. No, that would be nice. No, it's good to be back. I mean, it's always kind of fun to talk about something. I enjoy talking about the one-hit wonders. It's fun to talk about something a little different sometimes. Well, sort of.
Sort of. Yeah, we're not discussing a one-hit wonder this week, this episode, but this was suggested that we do this episode by Greg Mahochko, the grand poobah here of the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network. And that is because he lives outside St. Louis. He is a hockey fan. And the St. Louis Blues recently won their very first Stanley Cup championship.
Only took 52 years, but they finally did, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm just like, ooh, I have like 7 more years to get married, and I will be in that same time frame as the Blues to succeed in life. Something like that. Anyway, Mike, you obviously, we call you the hockey transplant. Anybody who has been listening to the show, and if you have not, you can go back in the archives. We recently did an episode. I don't remember which number it was, because I don't really pay attention to episode numbers that well. But we did an episode where we talked about, in March of 2019, after 6 seasons, we completed a quest to see all 31 NHL home team arenas.
Yes.
Really need to work on a better slogan for that. I don't.
I just kept calling it the Quest.
The Quest.
Yeah. It's, I don't know anything else better to say.
We finished in Boston, ironically enough, or coincidentally enough, or maybe it's Alanis Morissette ironic. I don't know. But then came the Stanley Cup playoffs, and during the Western the conference final round, I said to you, you know, Boston, the trips were fun, but something was just seemed lacking. Like, it didn't feel complete. Even though we've been to every arena, we were missing one thing. We needed to see the cup raised.
Yes.
When I initially said that to you, what was your reaction? What was your thought?
Well, I mean, I was in agreement. I think to set the stage, I'll tell people that in 2014, which was the first year that we started doing our quest, the Los Angeles Kings made it to the Stanley Cup final. And they were up 3-1 against the New York Rangers and had Game 5 in Los Angeles. And you had asked me about, do you want to go to Game 5? Because there's a chance the Cup could be won that night. And I was thinking, well, how much does it cost? And it was $700, which at the time...
Secondary market.
Yeah, this is secondary market. Obviously, everything sold out, or season ticket holders had all the tickets. And it came down to, do you want to pay $700? Even though, like, my biggest fear was we were going to drop $700 and the Rangers would have won, and then it would have ho-hum another game. I mean, yeah, you can say, oh, I got to see a Stanley Cup final game, but I wanted to be able to say that we saw the cup awarded or handed out. And so you were talking about, hey, maybe we should do it this year. And I think it was, yeah, once we got to the conference final round, which was San Jose Sharks against the St. Louis Blues, and then in the East, it was Boston Bruins against the Carolina Hurricanes. And so me, I love planning. And there's a part of me that's a little bit, I don't want to say nervous, but a little sad about the fact that this is it. I mean, there's no more of these. I mean, I mentioned it before, but the day that they announced the NHL schedule, which is actually going to be next week, is one of the most exciting days, my favorite days of the year. It's like Christmas morning. I can start looking around, and I got a spreadsheet, and I just go through and, okay, where can we go? What holidays can we, how many different other teams? Are there college teams? Are there basketball teams we could see at the same time? And so I kind of embraced the opportunity to figure out, okay, who's going to play? I kind of looked in the schedule and said, okay, these are the days I think the Stanley Cup final games are going to be. And I was exactly right, as it turned out, based on the fact that they kept the same schedule for like the last 4 years. And I was thinking, okay, well, if it's Boston against San Jose, who would have home ice? If it's Carolina versus St. Louis, who would have home ice? And I was looking at all the possibilities, figuring out, because we had, I had the thought in my head as well of, like, I think it'd be fun years later, like maybe when I'm retired or something, to go to every game of the final. I think it'd be just be kind of neat, you know, just get, you know, if I had the ability to just to do it. And so I was like, well, I'm not gonna do that now, but then, like you had said, it'd be fun to see the Stanley Cup awarded. And so I was thinking, maybe we can just go to like Game 5 and then Game 6 and Game 7. You mentioned Game 4, and I said, no, I don't want to. That's too much traveling, and the odds of it being a sweep are pretty slim. And so then it was like, okay, let's do Game 5, 6, and 7. Well, when Boston won the East, they had a better record than both San Jose and St. Louis. So we knew, okay, Boston's going to host Game 5, Game 7. San Jose or St. Louis will host Game 6. Well, tickets went on sale that night, and face value with the fees for the cheapest ticket for Game 5 was $740, and Game 7 was like $1,020, which, I mean, didn't seem that bad if I'd have known, but also they were also the cheapest seats, you know. And if you want to be way up in the nosebleeds, it's like if you're going to see the Cup Award, you might as well be closer, I guess. So we just, at that point, we just kind of waited for the Sharks and Blues series to wrap up. The sad part was flights to San Jose for Game 6 were like $70 each way. The flight to St. Louis was a little bit more. And so when the Blues beat San Jose, you and I, we started texting each other, and we said, let's go ahead and buy a plane ticket. Let's buy it now. And it was, I think it was like $600 for a plane ticket to St. Louis. And I was like, we'll figure out tickets. They'll surely go on sale at some point. Well, no, they didn't. Their tickets were only available to season ticket holders. And they, but the Blues did have a thing where they offered, if you wanted to buy a season ticket for next year, they would actually give you a chance to get Stanley Cup final tickets. And you said you looked into that?
Yeah, I submitted some form so that now I get all the emails about it, because, and I was trying to figure out, okay, if I bought, you know, even half a season, what could I resell for to get, you know, not to make a lot of money, but just to recover my losses.
Sure.
But yeah, that's something that I, one, as someone who doesn't like people who who mark up prices just because. I don't want to be doing it to people. Yeah. And at the same time, it's like, I'm not going to go to the game, obviously, because mm-hmm. I'm not going to fly into St. Louis every week. But
yeah, and exactly. And so then, so at that point, we're like, okay, let's just see, you know what, the tickets from Boston for game 5 and 7 were kind of expensive. Let's just focus on game 6. Well, when those tickets finally became available, they were all secondary market, and they were all, I think it was like $1,500, $1,600 where they started. Yeah. And by the time the game rolled around, they were up to like $2,200, $2,300. That was, again, that's for the cheapest seat. And so as it turned out, that same weekend, you know, the game 6 in St. Louis was on a Sunday. You had gotten reservations on Saturday to go see the new Star Wars land at Disneyland. Mm-hmm. And so we said, you know what? Let's just go to Disneyland instead and not go to the game. It's not worth it, because my biggest fear was we'd pay all that money and we'd fly there, and then the cup wouldn't be awarded that night. I mentioned to you, I have a good friend named Ashley who's from St. Louis. Her and her husband are both big Blues fans, and they flew back to St. Louis for game 3 of the series. They paid $1,000 for their ticket to the game, plus they bought round-trip flights, and the Blues lost 7-2. And she said that she was devastated, and after I saw that, I hate to say it, but after seeing her experience, it made me not want to go to game 6. So then when the Blues went up 3-2 in the final, and it was like, oh, God, they're actually going to be at home in game 6 with a chance to win their first cup. And then so that you saw there were thousands of people outside, there were, you know, and I couldn't do it. And so I watched, like, there's a part of me that said, you know what, I wish they'd win it for their home crowd, you know, even if I'm not going to be there, then that's good for them. And so we went to Disneyland on Saturday, had a great time, and then the next day was the Blues game, and the Blues lost. And that's when it kind of dawned on me, and I'm like, well, it's game 7. So what do we do now? Do we just go? Because I was starting to get this inkling, like, I'm not the Blues fan that I used to be that's the Blues were the team that I followed when I first discovered hockey 25 years ago. And I started, like, when I was watching some of that game 6 game, I was thinking, you know what, how emotional would it be if they won it? And so then it dawned on me that, like, you know, they're going to go to game 7. If they wound up winning it, I would hate to miss out. Like, I mean, I think it'd be so cool to be there. And that's when I said, what do you think, Chad? You want to go to game 7?
And I said, I am fighting a cold. This does not sound like the reasonable thing to do right now. But after mulling it over and talking to some other people, it came down to, what is the bigger regret in life? Mm-hmm. Going, spending money that, you know, could be better spent elsewhere, namely rent for the month, or not going and the Blues make history.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that part of it, you know, if it would have been San Jose, I would have wanted to be there because that's the team that got me into hockey.
Yeah.
Had it been Nashville, Chicago, Winnipeg, you know,
yeah,
we probably would have been like, okay, I think we could maybe wait till next year.
Sure.
But I think because of that emotional attachment to, even though I'm not, I did not jump on the Blues bandwagon this year, even, you know, being from Illinois, closer to St. Louis, growing up watching like 5 minutes of Blues games on TV when I went to watch Charles in Charge or We Got It Made and being upset that they were preempted. But I knew, again, for you, that was your team growing up. It was like,
you probably knew Blues fans, you know, when you were growing up, right? With the high school
Nobody watched hockey.
Nobody had a Blues cap or a jersey at school?
No, it was Cardinals.
Cardinals, right, yeah.
Cardinals, yeah. But I knew, and I didn't want to be the one, like, if they won, and if I said, I'm not going to go, and you didn't go, I didn't want to be... I would hold that guilt to be like, so, and I was also like, you know, yes, we need to, it is game 7. The cup will be handed out, and it's either going to be St. Louis making history or Boston winning at home, which would have been also a sight to behold, I'm sure, because Boston fans would have been ecstatic.
Yeah, I know when we started looking at ticket prices, I remember talking to you and you said, it's kind of expensive. Well, there's always next year. And that was one of the things when I had talked to my wife to kind of smooth it over and say, honey, I'm gonna fly to Boston and fly back the very next day. And, you know, and it was sort of like, well, when she even said, oh, well, what if you did it next year? And I think the theme that comes up in this whole process for me was the term finality. Hmm. Like you said, the quest is over. We'd seen all the arenas. It would be a great way to wrap it all up. And I didn't want, I just felt bad if we would have just kicked the can down the road. And it would have been very easy to say, oh, yeah, let's just, you know, we'll do it next year. Well, let's plan on it next year. Well, what happens if next year is a sweep? or if it ends in 5 or 6, or like you said, what if Toronto is in the final? Those tickets would have been just completely asinine prices. Yeah. You know, or what if it would have been a city like Winnipeg where you can't really fly directly from LA? You know, the advantage of it being Boston was that there are nonstop flights to Boston that allow us to fly on the morning of the game and get in with a few hours to spare. And actually, our flight, we left at 7, we got in about 3:45, and the game didn't start till 8. So we had plenty of time to kill, and it worked out perfectly. Thankfully, there was no delays and nice, clear weather. But I was just so nervous that, yeah, if we keep putting this off, who knows? I mean, it's easy to say, well, we can wait until one of the local teams, the Kings or the Ducks or even the Sharks, which is a short flight, we can wait till one of those teams make the finals, but who knows? And how expensive would they have been? Who knows where you and I would have both been with our jobs?
Yeah, and I think looking back, taking into account, too, that last year we had tickets for Game 7 of the Vegas-Washington series. Mm-hmm. The series was over in 5 games.
Exactly.
So you can't guarantee that you're going to go 7 games, you know, like going back to your story at the beginning about the Kings winning in 5. It's until you get to Game 7, there are no certainties.
Yeah.
So I think that helped finalize the decision as well. It's like, it is, we know.
No matter what.
Someone's raising that cup at the end of the night.
Yeah, and I think we both cringed in 2014 when we watched that game together, the Kings won in overtime, double overtime. You know, I'm like, that would have been one of the most tremendous games to be at, and to think like $700 now, not to brag, but $700 right now would be nothing for me. I could drop that for something of momentous occasion. And so when it came down to this one, it was like, okay, the first ticket prices we saw were like total nosebleeds in Boston, and they were $1,700, and that was before the fees. So the fees pushed it close by around $2,000. And they made the news for Game 5 because there was fights in the stands between Boston fans during Game 5. And I don't want to be around a bunch of drunk, rowdy folks. This is the game. This is the Stanley Cup final. I wanted to experience the best possible way. And so I appreciate you. I'm glad I was able to convince you and say, you know what, if we're going to do this, if you're going to drop $2,000 to sit in the nosebleeds, why not just drop $3,000 and sit by the glass? We were about 20 rows up from the glass. Our tickets were about $2,900. But there were other tickets that were like 2 rows behind the glass, and like I think you've mentioned, it distorts your view down there. It's not the best. I mean, granted, it would be great for when the cup's handed out, and so yeah, it worked out where we said, you know what, there were tickets that were more expensive that were closer, and there were tickets that were more expensive that were worse than ours, and we just happened to. I kept an eye on it for the days leading up to it, and I just said, my boss was cool with me going, your boss was cool with you going. He said, this is a good ticket price. It's on the corner. It's low enough to where we can get a perfect view. I even went as far as doing research because in 2013, the Chicago Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup, but they won it in Boston. They were playing the Bruins, and they won the game in Boston that night. So I looked to see which end of the ice the cup was going to come out on, and I was only looking for tickets in that section to try to maximize the exact view we were going to have. And so what made it really fun for us was, of course, we go there. We didn't really pack anything. We just took a lift straight from the airport to the game, walked around, did some shopping, got a bite to eat. And then when we took our seats, there was a married couple sitting next to us that were season ticket holders. And the wife was just talking to me the whole time. And it was really great. Like I'm not going to try to, you know, I was wearing a Blues t-shirt. I didn't want to wear a jersey, but I was wearing a t-shirt, and she was really friendly the whole time. And her team and the Bruins won the Stanley Cup 8 years ago. They were in the finals 6 years ago. And she was at the game, she said, 6 years ago when the Blackhawks won. So she'd seen the cup, and she's also known her team to have won a cup. So I think she kind of was like, well, obviously I want my team to win, but if your team wins, you know, so be it. I think we lucked out. We didn't have any of those obnoxious fans near us in that sense.
Yeah, I mean, there were a couple guys that were going back and forth with people down below who were sitting down, which is a whole other thing that I won't get into. But but overall, yeah, it was a perfectly fine sporting experience. There was no obnoxiousness, even, I mean, nowhere around us even.
No, not really. I mean, because even when we were at the Boston game in March, we heard a lot of heckling kind of fans were, as it's like, I don't know, I'm not trying to give too much credit to Midwestern folk, salt of the earth, but it seemed like there was a lot of Blues fans there, so they're not, you know, they're guests in this house, and they were really respectful, You know, it was fun to see some of the signs. I think there was a guy who had a sign that said,
"I've been waiting for my whole life for this."
Yeah, waiting my whole life for this. And then, and then when the game's getting started, right? Well, do you want to talk about, I guess, when we got there a few hours early, they had like a little fan fest set up outside with NHL Network was doing live coverage, NBC Sports, some of the, I think NESN, the Boston mm-hmm. channel, was doing some live coverage. We kind of walked around. We went and got a bite to eat. And what was really neat is we saw several of the St. Louis Blues players' wives and girlfriends all come in together. And they were sitting across the restaurant from us. I one of them walked by while I was eating, and I kind of got her attention and showed her my blue shirt and said, "Hey, we're going to do it tonight, right?" And she said, "Yeah, we are," you know. And so that was really kind of neat. You know, we got our merch. I got my shot glass. We got some pucks, and you got a T-shirt, right? And so once the game started, I mean, I've been to dozens of hockey games over the years. I have never heard a building that loud. I mean, it was, when people say it's deafening, it was absolutely deafening. Like, you could hear it rattling your eardrums, like how loud it got, especially when they did the warm-ups and they did the starting lineups, and they announced Zdeno Chara from the Bruins, who had his jaw broken in one of the games and is playing through the pain. And so when they announced his name as the last starter for the Bruins, it just lit the place up. And yeah, and so I wasn't sure what to expect. We go to a lot of concerts, and we always say, like, if somebody's standing in front of you, well, then I guess you're standing. Like, we always say, is this going to be a standing show or a sitting show? And you don't want to be like, I don't pay to see somebody's back. So if someone's standing up, I guess I'm going to have to stand up, and you just apologize to the person behind you and say, sorry. I mean, it's going to be what it is. You know, you hate to be the only one standing in a section. There's always those people. But so I was curious, okay, what's it going to be like? And we more or less stood for the entire first period, which was incredible. That's where I started thinking, okay, this is worth it. We spent a small fortune for these tickets, but we got to see an experience that you're pretty much never going to see. It's Game 7 of a Cup Final. How does it get any better than this? And I'm so impressed by the fact that those fans were all standing for pretty much the entire first period. You'd sit during the TV timeout, which is perfect. You can actually catch your breath, relax. I could answer some text messages. My friends were texting me all night, it seemed like. But yeah, and then, like I said, I think when the Blues scored first, that's when it kind of hit me, like, oh, okay. Like, I mean, I was hoping the Bruins would score a goal just so we could see the reaction, but obviously I would have liked to have seen the Blues won. So when they scored first, it wasn't just more like, yeah, way to go. It was more like, oh my God, they just scored. Like, it was more shocked than anything else. And I felt like the Bruins fans around us were kind of like, oh, okay, well, that's just one. Don't worry. It's going to be fine. And then Alex Pietrangelo scored to make it 2-0 with about, I think it was in the last minute of the first period. And it seemed like that just took the crowd out of it at that point, right?
Yeah, I mean, you look back now, obviously the game was over at that point. Boston did not score until about 3 minutes left in the third period after the Blues had gone up 4-0.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, as you kind of talked about earlier, your Blues fandom had kind of waned. You don't follow the team as intently as you used to.
Yeah.
What were you feeling during that time? Because for me, like I said, I didn't jump on the bandwagon. I wanted St. Louis to win out of a hometown, I guess, loyalty. But if Boston would have won, I would have been like, cool, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
As a fan of the team for so many years, were you questioning your fandom, or were you just...
Well, I think it's always you're waiting for the other shoe to drop. I mean, and I was texting some friends of ours who have been fans for a while, and we're, as Blues fans, you're just sort of trained to expect the worst, right? And so, like, because we've been, well, I say we, I just said that, I hate when sports fans say we, but I guess you say we as fans have had moments where it's like, okay, this is a good Blues team. You know, I started following the Blues in 1993, which is right when I finished high school. And we were living in Kentucky, and I started watching the games on ESPN. I had a friend who was from Missouri, and we would play the video games together, and he was always the Blues. And then we moved to Southern Illinois. We had KPLR, the local channel that showed Blues games. All of a sudden, I had a local team I could watch. And it seemed like every year, I mean, they were in the middle of a long streak. I think they went 25 consecutive years of making the playoffs, even though they never made it to the final during any of those 25 years. And it seemed like every year, the first year that I watched after I got there, so it was 1994, that year's playoffs, there were people that were saying, like, oh, the Blues could lose in the first round or they could win the cup. Like, we didn't know what that team was going to be like. And I that was my first time as a fan cheering in the playoffs. Okay, this is great. This atmosphere is like nothing I've ever seen. And the Blues got swept. And it was kind of like, what? No, they're better than that. How did they get swept? And so it was like, okay, well, that's just the first year. You know, okay, I'm in it for this team. I'm going to be bleeding blue with them or whatever. And then the next year, the Blues went out and got the coach who had just won the Stanley Cup, Mike Keenan, with the Rangers. They'd signed some free agents. They put a good team together, and they went out, and they had a really good record. They finished with I think they were third in the conference. So they had home ice advantage in the first round against a Vancouver team that had just been to the final the year before but wasn't nearly as good. And the Blues lost in seven. They lost game seven at home in the first round. And it was like, again, is this what's going to be like? And then the third year was the year they got Gretzky. And it was like, oh, they got Wayne Gretzky. They finally won a first round series. And I'm like, okay, this team is poised to win. Their goalie got hurt in the playoffs, so they had to go to the backup goalie. And then in the second round, they were playing against the team with the best record in the league. And they were up 3-2. And they came home for game six and blew it. And then they went on the road in game seven and lost in overtime. And the goal that the guy, Steve Yzerman, scored, they show that goal every year during every NHL Stanley Cup playoff highlight package. And then from that point on, 97, 98, 99, like they were losing. They would get to a certain point. And I have a statistic later I can spout off. But what was frustrating was they would get into these best of seven series and they would be tied two games apiece and then just lose. They never could get past, like, you, after four games, you're like, okay, it's a three games, it's a best of three series. All they got to do is win two of these games, and they never could do it. And it just happened every year. Then when I went to Carbondale and I went to college and film school, met you, the first year I was there, the Blues finished with the best record in the league, won the President's Trophy, lost in the first round. Lost at home to the Sharks in game seven, and it was just totally deflating. And it was like that every single year. And so I always say, like, when I rescinded my fanhood, it got frustrating. And then when I moved to LA, it was like, I'm not there. I can't go to the games. I guess when Twitter came around, it was like I could follow the beat writers and learn about all the little intimate details of the team and stuff. But then there was four consecutive years, 2012 through 2015, where the Blues lost in the playoffs with home ice. They had all 4 years they had a home ice advantage in the series and lost. Three of those years was in the first round, and I was just like, I can't do this anymore. And so once, like at the beginning of this season, it seemed like, oh, they made some trades. They traded for Ryan O'Reilly. They made some free agent signings, and everyone thought, okay, this is going to be it. This team is, people were picking them to win the division, maybe even winning the cup. And then they started out terrible. And they were awful. And it just so happened that this year I took my wife home for Christmas and I said, let's go to a Blues game. I haven't been to one in years. This would be a good year to go. And so we went. I managed to get free tickets from a family friend. And I had a great time. And the Blues won, even though they were still like dead last in the league. And like I said, when they turned it around, I felt kind of a little bit of a kinship where I was like, oh, I was there earlier this year. So I'd seen them. I'd seen, you know, the interest was there. And so by the time when the playoffs started, it was like, oh, they got a chance, you know. So by the time they got to the final, and like, what was I feeling? Well, I was thinking about those teams in the 90s. You know, I mentioned I almost cried because I got very emotional because for some reason I was thinking about my mother. I remember her buying me a St. Louis Blues coat for Christmas one year. My mother passed away 10 years ago. And so that's when I started thinking about all those fans that I knew, all the family members that I knew, all the retired players that had played for the Blues so many years. I mean, I know you mentioned guys like Brett Hull. He won Stanley Cups with other teams, but he's connected to that city, you know, and he played there for more than any other place he played in his career. He worked for them. I think he still does work for them in some capacity. And, you know, everything that city's been through the last few years, the Cardinals are still, it's still a Cardinals town, I guess, right? And they continue to be consistent. They've won a couple World Series over the last, you know, 15, 20 years. But it was sort of like, I don't know, you kind of think about the history of the franchise at that moment. And when I could not let myself, even though they were up 2-0 going into the third period of that game, and I said, something's going to happen. It's bound to fail. And I never really let up until when they scored that third goal to go up 3-0. I think there was still like less than 10 minutes or so in the game. And that was like, okay, this might happen. That's when it really hit me. And then when they scored the fourth one, it's how do you put it into words? Like, it was, you're just kind of speechless thinking, like, all these years, I started thinking about, you know, Mike from college watching the games and watching the team get blow another series, and they're finally going to do it. And not only that, and I've told everybody who will listen, I'm so grateful that when they finally did win it, I was in a position both personally, professionally, and financially, that I could be there. I mean, because 1996, Mike, there was no way I would have been able to go to those games probably. But 2019, it worked out.
Yeah, and I just want to mention real quick that St. Louis as a city, like you said, is a Cardinal city, Cardinal fandom. But I don't think there were a lot of bandwagon jumpers. I think the Blues have had, you know, even without having success in the playoffs, still have that solid fan base.
Yeah.
Like I went to my first game 5 years ago, five, 6 years ago, whatever it was. And yeah, it was packed, you know, packed arena. The fans were really into it. It wasn't like you see these teams that don't do well that, you know, are barely putting 5,000-6,000 fans in an arena. Like St. Louis stands behind their teams unless they're getting ready to move to another city.
Well, I feel like they've always been there, but at a certain time when you lose as many times as you do, then it's like you slowly go, you know what, I'll just watch on TV rather than going. I don't want to spend the season ticket money. I'll go to a couple of games a year. That's why I don't think it was, that's a good point. I never really, you don't think about it as being bandwagon people versus just those fans that left and said, you know what, I'm still there, but I'm going to roll back my sponsorship of your team. And then they said, oh, now you're giving me something. Now I'm getting hopeful. I'm back.
Yeah, and I think it's amazing that they did a watch party at what is now Enterprise Center, the arena of the Blues, and they sold that out for Game 6 or for Game 7. And then Busch Stadium, which wasn't hosting a Cardinal game, said, well, let's, you know, if you still want to watch the game with other people, we'll sell tickets for a charity. Come. Mm-hmm. And it was pouring rain that night. But there were still, I don't know what the exact count was, but I want to say another 10 to 20,000 people.
Something like that, yeah.
Sitting in the rain watching. And
our friend Adam was there. He went to Busch Stadium to watch the watch party. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't think you do that if you're a bandwagon fan.
Exactly. I mean, it's like I said, you always hear stories about former players when they retire, they go back to St. Louis. Like people actually want to raise their families there. I mean, obviously they've had some turmoil over the year with some of the race relations and whatnot, but they've got the suburbs, you know, especially if you're a retired millionaire athlete, the suburbs are really nice and schools and everybody loves, wants to raise a family in that area, I guess.
So what is the stat that you were going to bust
The out stat of? That I was going to mention was just to show you, like, I remember when I first started my blog, I remember talking about how, like, I was going to create this thing that was sort of a like a pain scale. Like, if you were a sports fan, what would be more painful? Like, we always talked about, like, would it be more painful as a fan to see your team miss the playoffs or to see them make it and then lose? Like, what do you think? Which one would be worse?
Well, as a Miami Dolphin fan for the last 30 years, I think mediocrity is the worst because I would rather see them get to the playoffs because then at least you have some hope of having a decent team. But if they just keep missing the playoffs and keep being terrible.
But isn't that just crushing at all, though? Like, to see them?
They exceed expectation for all the years that they didn't make the playoffs.
Okay. Well, I think as I was drafting this thing, I said I'm making a list of all these elements that would be really, really frustrating for a fan. So it was like, having your team losing the playoffs. Okay, what about having your team losing the playoffs when they had home ice advantage? What about losing in a game seven or losing in a game seven at home? Like, what were the different levels of losing in the second round, losing in the third round, losing in the final? And I discovered that, like, as I mentioned, if you look at best of seven series, I think I was looking at all the times that the Blues were in a 2-2 series and then didn't manage to win it, because it seemed to happen a lot when I was growing up watching them. And so when I ran the statistics, I found out that, as you, I think you knew, the first 3 years the Blues were in the league, they made it to the final because there were six teams in the league and they added six new expansion teams. And then what they did was they put the original teams in one division and the expansion teams in another. And then the final was the best of each division. So the Blues were the best of the six new teams, right? So they made it to the final the first 3 years in existence. They got swept in all three finals. Well, those 3 years, they played three different series that were best of seven, and that wound up being tied at two games apiece. And they won all three of those series, right? This year, in 2019, all four series that they played were tied at two. And all four times, the Blues won the series. You know, they beat Winnipeg in six, including winning game, winning game five on the road in Winnipeg at the last minute was a great game. And then against Dallas in the second round, they lost game five, came back and won game six, and then won game seven in overtime. And then against San Jose, they won game five in San Jose, then came home and won game six. And of course, this series was won game five, lost game six, won game seven. So the first 3 years, they were 3-0 and in game sevens, or a game in seven best of seven series, tied at two. And then this year, they were 4-0. In between, from 1971 to 2016, they played in 19 different playoff series, best of seven series, that were tied at two games apiece. They lost 15 of the 19 series, including, I think it was, including nine in a row, which stretched from like 1986 to 1999. So that covered all the 90s. Anytime they were in a 2-2 series, they lost. And so when it just keeps happening like that, you're like, why can't they get over the hump? Because that's worse, because you get that hope. They've won two games out of the first four, and you're like, well, they can beat this team. Why can't they finish it off? And it was just maddening how crazy that was. Those first 3 years, they could do it. This year, they managed to do it, which is why I didn't get my hopes up too much this year. But then 15 out of 19, they lost. So
I think that's going to kind of wrap up this portion of the game. So last question.
Let me ask you real quick. Are you happy with your choice to do this whole thing?
Well, that's what I was going to ask you.
Okay.
I am glad that we went. It was a fun experience. We also factored more statistics or time. We were on a plane for 12 hours over the course of, 26, 27 hours. This math is not going to add up, so don't fact check me. But we were on a plane for 12 hours. We were in Boston for 15 hours.
Outside of a plane?
Outside of a plane.
We were only in a hotel for four and a half hours. Yeah, we were in a hotel less time than we were on the plane flying over there.
Or probably in the arena for the game.
That's true, yeah.
But you can't, I mean, you can put a price tag on it, and my credit card will prove that. But it was an experience that I think, for being the finality of this quest, it was the perfect way. And I think St. Louis winning, because had it been any other team who has won a championship, it would still would have been nice, but but this was historical.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think in a weird sort of way, I'm not trying to I don't know. There's a part of me that's kind of I feel like over the years, and I don't know, maybe I've been spending too much time on hockey Twitter recently because I've tried to get the blog going. There's so much negativity, and it tends to kind of wear you down. There's always some sort of controversy, and there's should this have been a suspension, and should this have, everybody's always complaining about something or other. And it's like, I'm kind of, in a weird sort of way, I'm glad we finished the quest, because I'm tired of having to deal with some of the aspects of the sport that I don't like. And so this was a good opportunity, because it was like, well, it's game seven. We can just wrap up the whole thing, and then I can decide how much of a hockey fan I'm going to be next year. I mean, I'm always going to be a hockey fan, but I don't know if it seemed like these last 6 years of the quest, I was really, really into it. And I think next year it's like, okay, maybe there's other things. I'm married now. I'm trying to find other things to do, and I don't want to be constantly. It's amazing how many times people will talk to me and I'm defined by hockey fandom. Yeah. People always ask you about something hockey related, and I'm like, I know I can talk music with you. I can talk about a movie. I work in a movie studio. And so I thought it would have been kind of funny to let's go to game seven, because either the team that I cheered for growing up is going to finally win their cup, and I'll say that I was there for history, and then I can wash my hands of the whole thing and be done. Or if the Bruins win the cup, then that's kind of proof to me that like the hockey gods don't exist. And I could just kind of bitterly say like, you know what? I'm done. I'm done with this, because that Blues team, it was probably one of the best teams that they ever assembled. To get that far, to have, the story about, what's her name, Layla, the little girl. Like, there's all these factors going into it. And then this particular song, which we're going to talk about after the break, that there was just all these factors went in. Everyone came saying, oh, it'd be a perfect, story for the movies, a Cinderella story. And so, if Boston would have won it, I would have just been, that would have also been me going, all right, I'm done. I'm bitter about this whole thing. I had a chance to see history in it, and it didn't happen. So either way, it's got the last hockey game I probably would have gone to for a while, no matter what. And it would have been nice. And you get to see the cup regardless. And so what was kind of cool was, I said we were 20 rows behind the glass, but by the time the cup got handed out, a lot of fans had left. And so I moved down. I think I was maybe seven or eight rows behind the glass. And so I got a nice, perfect view. And we stayed in the arena as long as we could for at least an extra hour after the cup handed out. And it's mostly just us and a bunch of Blues fans at that point. But I look back, and yeah, it was a hit. to my pocketbook, I guess. Do people still have pocketbooks? But at the same time, I'm like, I can't put a price on that. I tell everybody who'll listen, I best $3,000 I ever spent. Like, it seems crazy. Like, oh my God, I spent $3,000 for a hockey game. And I'm like, but I got to see history. And I got to see something kind of unique. And I think they said this is only the 17th Game 7 of the Cup Final. Mm-hmm. Chad, you got to see one of only 17 of these. And how many people were at each one? Okay, so you figure 20,000 people were at each one. Okay, so at the most, 20,000 people were at each one. So there's about 300,000 people that have seen a Game 7 out of 300 million. Yeah. You're one of them.
Hey, and more statistics. He said there'd be no math on this show. Yeah, I have nothing to follow that up with other than the quest was fun. I'm glad we did it. This was the perfect capper to end it. I don't know what's next. We'll find out what we're going to do next year when we get really bored. And
I mean, that's one of the ways that I was able to get my wife to convince her to let me go is by saying, we're not going to go on any more trips until Seattle joins the league in 2 years. So the next 2 years might just be the occasional Kings or Ducks game or something if we decide, oh, okay, tickets are pretty cheap. The Kings are going to be pretty bad next year, so maybe the tickets will be pretty cheap on StubHub, you know.
But there is one more element to this story, and we'll touch on that right after this.
Hi, this is Greg Mahochko, the host of Nerds United on the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. And over the years that I've been running the Nerds United show, I've been fortunate enough to speak with many of my talented friends, both artists and writers, creators of comic books, but I've also spoken with some more recognizable names in comics and entertainment. Legendary artist Greg Land, hey, we Greg's gotta stick together. Writer Colin Bunn, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, and comic book creator DMC Daryl McDaniels, The Flash of yesteryear, and in more recent memory, Flash's dad, John Wesley Shipp, and a lot more. And I encourage you to subscribe to the Nerds United podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, or you can check it out anytime you want on jitterymonkey.com. And as founder of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network, I really do appreciate your support. When you share a podcast, you help get our little corner of the podcasting world out to even more people. So anytime you do that, you really don't know how much we appreciate it. So share away.
And that was kind of our theme song that we played up through New Year's, the New Year's Day Parade. Eddie Renzi, one of the Jacks, he was the original guy to start it. And going into the parade, we have floats. We have over 400 people who walk with us through Center City. It's the biggest parade in Philadelphia, been going on for over 100 years. Well, we are in the comics division. There's three divisions, comics division, and we won first place. So we've been going crazy about Gloria ever since. You know, we've played Gloria. It was nonstop. January 6th, 5 days after the parade, we're still on a high of winning first place. And every single day, there's 40, 50 people in this place every single day because we won, and the camaraderie and how proud we are and putting signs up in our bar. Now the Blues came here on January 6th. So we're still on that high of being here in first place, still playing Gloria nonstop. And they just kind of ran into us at the perfect day, the perfect time. And it's kind of been the perfect run, the perfect season right now.
So a song from 1982 became synonymous with the 2019 St. Louis Blues because of a bar in Philadelphia.
Sure. Right?
That's, you know, whatever I guess it takes to get a lucky charm. And would you say, as a St. Louis sports fan, Gloria is now the new Rally Squirrel?
Rally Squirrel. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm curious to see, do they take it in next year? Like, do they just say, let's retire it now? It's good luck. We don't want to try to risk this. Or do they just maybe try and bring it back for the playoffs? Because I don't remember, were they playing it in the regular season as well?
They, according to the research, is it came after.
It was in January when they played it in their locker room. But I'm like, when did they start playing it in the arena after games? I wonder. Because, I mean, I know they did it in the playoffs, but I wonder if they were still doing it in the regular season. Yeah.
According to this quote from Joel Edmondson I have here is, they were talking about being in the bar. DJ kept playing Gloria. and they decided they should play it after their win. They won their next game, got a shutout, so they just kept playing it. So since January, it's been going on. And I get, I don't know, you know, I tangentially follow hockey Twitter stuff, so I'd see people tweeting, play Gloria, Gloria. Yeah. And I'm like, why, what is Archie Bunker's daughter doing now?
Well, the funny part is I also, like, I've seen other, I find myself paying a lot of attention to the Edmonton Oilers. I really like Connor McDavid, and so I follow a lot of their writers and on Twitter and whatnot. And it's interesting to see how, like, a lot of them have said, we need a song. Like, and they're trying to, like, force it. And I'm like, we should have a poll and ask they're asking the head coach, the new head coach, hey, what do you think for these different songs? And it's like, well, that was kind of organic. The Blues one was just, it just happened to be, it was a good luck charm at this bar, and then they went on this winning streak, you know. So it's funny to think that, like, I mean, I remember baseball teams having these sort of songs, and but now the fact that that song's going to be synonymous with them, it's not like she's from St. Louis. Yeah. You know, she was from New York, apparently. Yeah, I can't even imagine, like, what's it going to happen? Is it going to run its course? Is it going to be old next year?
Well, I asked you on the way home to record this, is come March 2020, or I should say come kindergarten of 2025, 26, how many classes are going to be filled with girls named Gloria?
Yeah, I wonder. It's sort of an omen in that sense, right? Yeah. They're going to name their kids after Game of Thrones characters, or they're going to name them Glory.
Well, better than Hitler. Weird turn. Anyway, but getting back to Laura Branigan, the song Gloria, yes, it's a popular song from 1982, and I was going to say real quick, Edmonton Oilers, if they're going to pick a song, it's either got to be Corey Hart or Bryan Adams. Has to be.
Somebody Canadian.
It's got to be Canadian.
Could be Shania Twain. Could be Rush or Arcade Fire. Anybody?
Nickelback?
No. Before you, I think I mentioned it to you. You said you did not know that this song was actually originally recorded in Italian. Mm-hmm. And I mean, without looking, I believe that there was a producer or somebody who had heard it and said, "We need to make an American version or an English language mm-hmm. version of that." And that kind of was the impetus of the whole song, or at least going to her.
Yeah, and we were listening to her greatest hits, and it's not only this song, but it's amazing how many other songs of hers have been covered, or, you know, I don't know the history, so I don't know if she was covering them as well, if someone had done before, but we found out one of her songs was it Power of Love, which was the Celine Dion song. And
she also did How Am I Supposed to Live Without You, which was written by Michael Bolton, first recorded by her, and then he took it to number one on the charts himself several years later.
Yeah, it's just, it's interesting that this, when it came out, Gloria stayed on the charts for 36 weeks, which was a record at the time for a female artist, which is, I think you're not going to get something like that today, male or female, because everything is so disposable, as we discussed, and everything is just single-based, it runs its course. Real quick. We're not going to do a full Wonder Why episode here. We're just kind of touching on this, but...
Well, she's not... Well, technically, because she's not a one-hit wonder.
Right.
This song went to number two, but I looked it up. She had 7 songs in the top 40,
But just to give you some background on the song and Laura Branigan, if you have been wondering who she is with the success of Gloria, or the re-success, I should say. The song peaked in the top 10 at number 2 the week of November 27th, 1982. So here, as we like to give charts out on the show, here's the top 10 chart for the week that she peaked. Number 10, fittingly enough, is a song called 10 Muscles.
I don't know that.
Diana Ross.
Oh, is it just people? She was just getting hits because people knew her, I guess. You know?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's not called 10 Muscles. It's just called Muscles. The previous week, it was also at number 10. Learn to read charts. At number 9... Although it would have been fitting if it was 10 Muscles. At number 9, The Girl Is Mine.
By Michael Jackson, okay.
And Paul McCartney.
Yes.
Yeah. Number 8 is Steppin' Out.
By Joe Jackson?
By Joe Jackson.
Okay. Jackson's a representative.
The Jackson 6.
Mm-hmm.
Number 7 is Maneater.
Okay, Hall & Oates. Which,
again, when it comes to Hall & Oates, it amazes me how early in the 80s those songs peaked. Like, I remember them later.
Oh, no, yeah. I mean, because they were around in the 70s, right?
Yeah. You know?
And then by the time the 80s rolled around, they just fit right in. Okay. And it's funny that you'd have a Michael Jackson song 9 and Maneater 8, because there's that famous story that Michael Jackson heard I can't go for that by Hall & Oates, and said, I'm going to steal that beat. And met Daryl Hall, I think it was when they did We Are the World. And he told him later, he said, I heard that beat and I stole it and used it for Billie Jean. And Daryl Hall was like, sure, you know, go ahead.
Yeah. Number six is Mickey.
Tony Basil.
Tony Basil. Number five is Heartlight.
The Neil Diamond song from E.T.?
Is that from E.T.?
Yeah, remember? Turn on your headlight, because E.T. had the little lid up in his finger.
You learn something new every episode.
I'm pretty sure it was from that movie. It was inspired by the movie.
Okay, there's no way to fact check this, so...
No. Don't bother looking it up. Mike's mistakes.
Speaking of movies, number four is Up Where We Belong.
I believe Joe Cocker and Jennifer Warren. Okay.
Yeah. From...
Officer and Gentleman, right, yeah.
Yeah, number three, Heart Attack.
By Olivia Newton-John?
Yes. Yeah. Number two is Gloria, and number one is Truly by Lionel Richie.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I think I remember hearing that he'd kept her off the number one spot.
So, yeah, and then the Grammys that year, Laura Branigan was nominated for Best Female Pop Vocal Performance alongside Linda Ronstadt, Olivia Newton-John, Juice Newton, and that year's winner, the famous Melissa Manchester.
Melissa Manchester, a name from the past, yeah. Yes. Wasn't she on Blossom?
Was she?
Didn't she date her dad?
I have no idea who Melissa Manchester is.
Oh, no? Oh, yeah. Just the name.
But this is one bit of trivia about Laura Branigan that I find absolutely amazing, is the early 80s, you know, television was just coming into existence. MTV was coming into existence. We cross over with musicians becoming actors. So Laura Branigan made a couple of TV appearances on Chips.
Chip, okay.
Knight Rider and the cinematic television classic, Automan.
Automan?
It's about a guy who could turn into a car.
I say, Chips and Knight Rider, that's at that time, that's A programming right there.
And
right?
I think her songs were used in Miami Vice.
Oh, okay, sure. Well, as we always ask on Wonder Why, I'll ask you, do you remember the first time you heard it? Do you remember it being popular at all?
I remember it being popular, but I have no recollection. I mean, 1982, I was 8 years old, so I would have just been hearing it. I wouldn't have been paying attention to artists or anything other than Kiss.
I mean, it's funny that they had Girl Is Mine, because I'm sure I was listening to Thriller a lot around that time. But I can remember it. It's the kind of song you'd hear at JCPenney when you're walking through. My mother used to work at like a department store, and so you'd hear it. I mean, you mentioned, had I seen the music video, I can't picture it, the video. I mean, I'm sure I probably had seen it at one point, but it's one of those songs that here's a good word for it, ubiquitous over the last 37 years. Yeah. And I jokingly mentioned this, but my father, I think he had heard enough of her music on the oldie station or the local adult contemporary station where he lives, that he actually got a Laura Branigan Greatest Hits CD maybe 5 years ago. And I came home to visit for Christmas, and he was asking me about Laura Branigan. Oh, are you familiar with her? And you know, and I was like, well, yeah, you know, your daughter and I used to listen to Laura Branigan when we were kids. We never owned any of her stuff, but we knew who she was. Like, he didn't, because as a dad, you're taught, like, you can't listen to my kids' music. So he never wanted to, you know, he liked his own stuff. And I thought it was so funny that he discovered Laura Branigan as if she was some new artist. And he was so excited to go into her stuff. And it was like, I mean, I'm sure he knew, but I would have hated to have told him that she had passed away in 2004. You know, I just found out that she passed away on my birthday too, but... Oh. But it was like, I mean, because she was only 52. It's fairly, you know, fairly young. It's very tragic.
Yeah, brain aneurysm, I believe.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you mentioned this earlier before we started recording about, with the success of Gloria, thanks to the blues, that some media outlets have tried to get comment from her or try to get her to perform. And it reminds me of the story of when Johnny Carson died and the producers called up wanting a quote from Rodney Dangerfield.
Oh, is it? Okay.
They're like, well, you have to get someone in here to do a seance, because that's not happening.
Well, and I believe that the people who, I think there's somebody, it's either a family member or like the president of the fan club who like runs a Twitter account and has commented several times saying, oh, you know, Laura's family is extremely touched by the fact that this and loves that the Blues are using this. And so she's in, like, this person is the official spokesperson for Laura's estate, I guess. But
yeah, just staying on the death topic. Well, because Laura Branigan had success beyond 82, as we discovered, she was still charting in the late 80s. And then I believe it was around 93 or so, somewhere around in there, she retired because her husband had cancer.
Oh,
and
really?
So she quit to stay home and nurse him. And then he passed away in, I want to say 2003, 2004.
Oh, right before she did? Oh, wow.
Or, I'm sorry, not 2003, in 96.
Oh, okay.
A few years earlier, yeah. He survived, yeah, he died June 15th, 1996. So, and then she came back and tried, I think she did a couple albums after that.
But, oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah, that's but, I mean, that's Laura Branigan. That's.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's just, she's just one of those names. Like, and I know there's a lot of people probably who are familiar with Gloria. They may not be able to name the artist who sang it. You know, and I know that between Gloria and Self Control, you're still going to hear her, especially on. What's interesting is because of the genre that she was in, sort of that pop, but also sort of that female vocal. She did a lot of ballads, so you're going to hear her on the oldie station, but you're also going to hear her on like light rock stations that just play every year. You know, that don't specifically. They can play the oldies with the current stuff as long as it's just sort of smooth. She probably fit on like a smooth R&B jazz station, right? Like doing, you know, her version of, like Power of Love is just this sort of strong ballad. So it's like she's still, I got a feeling she's still around. Even if you look at a city like Los Angeles, which is not connected to the St. Louis Blues in any way, I'm sure that she probably still gets played on the radio out here.
Yeah, it will, like you said, it'll be interesting to see what happens next season to see if they keep Gloria going or if they come up with a new theme song. But now, to close out this episode, because, again, bonus episode, not really following a format, don't really have much more to say about Gloria or Laura Branigan, but I'm going to end this. I have five songs here. I'm going to question your music and sports knowledge.
Oh, God.
Because I'm editing this or recording this so close to post time, there will be no songs added in. You can go to YouTube and look these songs up yourself if you want to hear them. But I'm going to give you a song. You tell me the sports team that is known for using this song.
Okay.
We Are Family.
We Are Family was, I believe, the Pittsburgh Pirates in the late 70s. 79, maybe?
It's Pittsburgh Pirates. Oh, okay. So, yeah. I believe it was the 70s.
Willie Stargell. And they won the World Series. I want to say in 79.
Here's an easy one. New York, New York.
Is it? I mean, the Yankees use that, I guess.
The Yankees use it, and bit of trivia is there's a version by Frank Sinatra and a version by Liza Minnelli.
Okay.
Yankees would, if after a home win, they would play the Frank Sinatra version. After a home loss, they would play the Liza Minnelli version.
Really? That's funny.
Liza was not happy, wanted to be part of the winning celebration, and they said, fine, we just won't play you at all.
Oh, God.
Yeah. this one you're going to love, Chelsea Dagger.
Chelsea Dagger is the goal song for the Chicago Blackhawks.
Which I did not realize, one, that this was an actual song, and two, that it was a more recent song. Like it's.
Oh, really?
I believe it's the guy from the Fratellis.
Sure. And the Fratellis, I think one of their songs is a goal song. So, you know, it's. Yeah, that's a thing. I mean, it's one thing to have a song that you play after you win a game, but now all these hockey teams have songs that they play after they score a goal. Yeah. You know, the Hall & Oates, Toronto Maple Leafs kind of got some flack by some fans because they used You Make My Dreams Come True as their goal song, and people don't like it. I'm like, that's a fun song, but, you know.
Okay, this one, we'll see if I would not know. I mean, if you explain this song to me, is it from the team perspective? I would know. From the song title, I have no idea. Sirius. S-I-R-I-U-S.
Sirius?
Sirius.
Like Sirius Black from Harry Potter?
Yes.
I'm not exactly sure.
That is the Chicago Bulls theme song.
Oh, really?
Yes. You know, now starting from North Carolina.
I was going to say, the one that back in the day that they had with Michael Jordan was like a song by the Alan Parsons Project. That's Sirius. Right? Is that Sirius?
That's
okay.
Sirius, yeah.
Everyone knows that. Everyone knows that. That's what it's called. Okay. The Alan Parsons Project. Yes.
And then finally, kind of capping this off to come full circle, Sweet Caroline.
Sweet Caroline, which is, it's creepy as hell because it's the Boston Red Sox and because the song was Neil Diamond. I mean, they joked it was a crush, but he wrote it for Caroline Kennedy and they've sort of, Boston has adopted it. And I remember when Neil Diamond got his Kennedy Center honor, you know, they always have these famous people come out and sing the songs of the artist if it's a musician who's getting an honor. And what they did was they had like a bunch of people, like the Fenway fans, then they had like a fake Green Monster, and they had a bunch of people wearing Red Sox jerseys singing it. You know, and everybody, it's kind of, I mean, I saw Neil Diamond in concert a few years ago, and he still plays it, and everybody kind of chants along with it. And yeah, that's a song. I mean, what was really interesting, I thought, was when Prince died, the Minnesota Wild adopted Let's Go Crazy as their goal song. And I think some of the other, I don't know if the Timberwolves or the Vikings did. And I specifically remember, because you and I were going to random hockey games on this quest, but maybe not so much Prince, because I think Prince died in April during the playoffs. But when David Bowie died in January, and the rest of that's hockey season, it seemed like I was hearing a lot more Bowie songs when there were stoppages in play, when there were commercial breaks, when there were, you know, just, it was, I mean, was it a tribute, I guess? But it's interesting, I mean, because I'm sure if you interview people who do the in-house arena experience, they've got to have a bunch of music on file, right? And I think it's, do they have a song for this particular time? Oh, there's a fight, we'll play this one. You always hear Saturday night's all right for fighting on it, especially if it's a Saturday, you know. But so I like the idea of taking songs, like especially an artist like Laura Branigan, maybe people don't know about, and now all of a sudden these people in St. Louis, or it could be St. Louis Blues fans who live on the other side of the country, who might be 25 years old and have no concept of who she is, and they'll kind of go back and listen to some really interesting, I think fun 80s pop, you know, soft pop or soft rock, and also pop ballads.
Very good point. Last question on the spot. If you had to choose a goal song for yourself, what goal song would you choose?
For myself. You know what's so funny? I've always, and maybe it was especially after Bowie died, there was one song of his. It's not even one of my favorite songs of his, but you probably heard it. It's a song called Rebel Rebel. And I think it's almost like a metronome. Like, as you always think about when you think of a goal song, you want people to be able to either sing along or clap along with it. And for some reason, I always thought if I was the GM of a team, it'd be so cool to have David Bowie as my song, because I'm a huge David Bowie fan. And that was the song that just kind of has this beat that it's easy to kind of keep the beat and people can clap along with it. And that was the one that I always thought, again, not my favorite. And I don't know if it means anything. The title of the song doesn't necessarily mean anything. It probably has to do with, androgyny, right? There's a line in the song where it's like, you know, you don't know if they're a boy or a girl or something like that. And so it's all about being yourself. And so that was the one that I... What about you, Chad? What was your goal song?
I
don't know, but
I want the Hamburglar to do a cover of that song called Rubble Rubble.
Okay.
I don't know, Krabby Appleton.
We've gone on too long.
Yeah. So that's going to do it for this special episode. Mike, you will be back next episode on a full scheduled episode of Wonder Why, where we will 3 W's all in a row, www, where we will be discussing Ski-Lo.
He wished he was a little bit taller.
He wished he was on this episode, but he's on the next episode, and you'll just have to tune in and listen to hear my response, but I think I have a very shocking announcement to make on this episode, on that episode, Wonder Why, episode 97, 8. One of those two. Episode 98, I believe it is. So, 98. Ski-Lo, I wish. For Mike DeKalb, again, on Twitter, at Mike DeKalb. You can also check out HockeyTransplant.com. He has write-ups of majority of our trips. He's still a little behind.
I got a few left, yeah.
I'm on Twitter, at Chad Smart. Don't forget JitteryMonkey.com. Go over there, buy some t-shirts, buy some merch. Let us know you're listening. And as always, question everything, do something positive.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.